And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday afternoon, helping to get you over the hump and towards the weekend with plenty to do coming up over the next couple of hours. Clemson with a big win last night over the Gamecocks. Also, today is the release of the NFL schedule. That's coming up tonight. We'll get ready for that later on this afternoon. Yesterday, I gave the horsing world credit. But did they get it right with another decision made for this upcoming weekend? Plus, how would you categorize the quarterbacks of the 2021 season? Which teams will be in the market for a quarterback next year as well? And the goals for new SEC coaches, why the NFL draft remains a crapshoot, and a whole lot more over the next couple of hours. We will talk name, image, and likeness with a special guest later on this afternoon. Jeremy Schilling will join us an hour from now to talk some golf. And former NFL tight end Ben Troop will join us in a little bit to talk about not only the Tim Tebow story, but the NFL schedule release and a whole lot more just a little bit later this afternoon. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, ESPN Charleston, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can leave a message for the show there. You can also find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go, online at charlestonsportsradio.com. We are working through some things right now with the podcast, so if you are somebody who does listen to the podcast or go search for the podcast, there may be some issues over the next 24 hours with those as we get things sorted out to be able to get the podcast on more platforms. We're always expanding around here. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the board. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, staying cool and staying dry. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, trying to do the same. It is ugly out there. They already canceled one game tonight, right? College of Charleston and
College of Charleston and Coastal Carolina. It was supposed to be at Patriots Point today. That's been canceled.
Yeah, that's too bad.
And actually, Charleston Southern and Presbyterian had to move their game yesterday,
really,
to earlier in the day because of a threat of rain. And CSU came out on top 9-8.
Oh wow, sounds like a wild game. Fortunately, the rain stayed away. Well, maybe unfortunately for the Citadel. The rain stayed away last night, and Joe's College of Charleston got another win against the Citadel. Yeah. Who let the studio audience in today? Get them out of here. I don't want that on my show, applauding a Citadel loss. Quiet down, studio audience. The Bulldogs losing last night, so that's their 13th straight loss overall this year, and now they're, I think it's up to 17. What did I just say? 17 straight losses to the College of Charleston? It's been far too long. 6-3, the Cougars won last night. They'll play each other next Tuesday at Patriots Point. We'll have that game as well. It'd be a fun thing for the show if we put something on the line, some sort of bet, since I'm the broadcaster for the Citadel. Joe is an alumnus of the Cougars. But I would lose. I'm not doing that. I'd lose all these bets. I'd have to be doing crazy things on the show all the time. No, thank you. It's already crazy enough around here. So hopefully the Citadel next week can finally snap this losing streak against the College of Charleston.
And then how about the series or regular season finale between South Carolina and Clemson last night.
That's right. That's where we begin. Let me start with that. Clemson and South Carolina last night, where Clemson was able to avoid a sweep from the series that began over 2 months ago. Now, I've said this on the show before. It seems like many people disagree with me, probably most people. I think that was its own series. This is a separate thing. I don't get this whole three-game series. It's been going on for 3 months. I don't think of this as the same series. Nonetheless, Clemson avoided losing all three games this year with a win last night. And for Clemson, it was a big win, a good bounce back after getting swept this past weekend. They're already teetering on the playoff bubble. They had just lost three in a row. Obviously lost the first two to the Gamecocks already this year. So to beat a team ahead of you in the rankings, to beat your rival last night, to get off the schneid, that was a big win. And Clemson has now won 8 of their last 11. Meanwhile, the Gamecocks have gone in the opposite direction. They have now lost 8 of 12. They have Kentucky coming up this weekend where they have struggled. They haven't won a series there since 2009. And last night for South Carolina, they went 0 for 9 when batting with runners in scoring position. They left 13 men on base. They struck out 12 times. This was classic baseball in 2021. The Gamecocks only scored on home runs. Last night, they happened to be solo homers. They couldn't get the clutch hit. They struck out a bunch. They left people on base. They couldn't string a rally together. So often, teams are just waiting around for that home run to produce some offense. The Gamecocks' offense has become a problem, one that is so reliant on home runs. And that's modern baseball for most teams, especially at the professional level. You can win games like that, but you can't win championships. The Yankees have gone through that year after year. They'll win over 90 games each season. They'll make the playoffs, lead the league in home runs. Then you get to the playoffs, and when you go up against the best pitching staffs, home runs don't come so easily. Or if they do, there's not as many guys on base. You're not getting as many base runners. So there are more solo homers than the three-run homers you relied upon throughout the regular season to win games. And the Yankees have faltered in the playoffs. I mean, think of the fact that they have won one World Series in the last 20 years. They haven't been to the World Series now in a dozen years, right? It doesn't work against the best teams. And for the Gamecocks, they've won plenty of games this year, but the offense hasn't been good enough. There are 5 SEC teams ahead of them in the RPI rankings. They have lost to 4 of those 5 teams. And the 5th one, they have yet to play. So they haven't beaten the teams ahead of them in the SEC. They just lost to Clemson last night, a projected tournament team. You can't beat the better teams playing that way. Baseball has fallen in love with the home run, with home runs and strikeouts. It's the new analytical approach. Strike out, hit a home run, draw a walk, that's fine. And don't worry about putting the ball in play. But which team would you say has become the most analytical in Major League Baseball over the years? I would wager it's the Oakland Athletics. I mean, they wrote a book about it. They made a movie about it. Billy Beane gets credited with it when really it was Sandy Alderson in the 90s, but I digress. Right? Moneyball was a good movie, but really off base with a lot of the things in the movie. But you know, it's Hollywood. It was a good movie. But they made a movie about it. They wrote a book about it. It's called Moneyball. The Oakland A's are all about it. You know how many playoff series the Oakland A's have won the past 30 years? 1. Because Moneyball, the analytical approach, doesn't really work. In the NBA, it's all about three-pointers. But you know who the number one seed in the East right now is? The Philadelphia 76ers. They're 23rd in three-point shooting. You know who won the NBA championship a year ago? The LA Lakers. They were 23rd in three-point shooting. And especially when it comes to baseball, this analytical approach doesn't necessarily lead to World Series after World Series. You still need timely hitting. You still need to put the ball in play. You need professional hitters. You need clutch hitters. You need 2 strike hitters. That was a problem last night. Meanwhile, Clemson, they played some small ball. They used a sacrifice bunt. They had a double steal. They scored with 2 outs. They had some good 2 strike hitting. And Clemson needed this win. They needed to stay within that field of 64 to make the tournament. Clemson has missed the NCAA tournament just once since 1986. You don't want to do it again. But it almost feels like last night was actually a bigger deal for the Gamecocks. I always say the more interesting story is in the loser locker room. Right? We always love the negative more than the positive. We love the drama instead of a team. And when a team is winning all the time, right, that's not very fun. But when the team's struggling, that's when you focus on that team. And for the Gamecocks, with the loss last night and the way they're playing right now, it almost feels like that's the bigger takeaway, that they lost last night as opposed to Clemson winning. Because what a difference a few weeks, or in this case, maybe a couple of months make. When the last time these two teams met, the Gamecocks, they had the clutch hits. Right? They won a couple of one-run games. Now they look like a shell of themselves. They have dropped 3 straight series. They struggled versus North Florida last week. They lost last night against Clemson. And for a team that, at one point, when they played the Citadel, I remember, we were calling them the number 4 team in the country. Right? According to at least one of the polls, they were in the top 5. And Clemson, you know, they haven't had the same hopes as the Gamecocks have had throughout this season. Clemson started, what, 1-5 in the ACC? They were 5-8 overall to begin the year. That curbs some expectations. But when you're in the top 5 of the country and then the top 10 of the country and you're getting off to a good start, that sets you up to have certain set of aspirations. And it's a little bit different when you're a bubble team just trying to get into the tournament. But when you're a team that was being rated as one of the top 10 in the country, and now you're having conversations like, hey, can we go all the way to Omaha? Can we win a national championship this year? And to see the difference now compared to early on in the year, I think that's a bigger discrepancy. I think that's a bigger letdown or difference. At this rate, the way Clemson season began, forget the preseason expectations, whatever those may have been, it'd feel like a win just by getting to the NCAA tournament. But for the Gamecocks, the way this season began, feels like they need to do more than just get there. Under Mark Kingston, the Gamecocks are now 20 and 25 in games played after April 24th in his career. And they fade, and it's happening again. Go back at all the four of his seasons. Last year, obviously an exception because it was cut short. But this time of year, the last month of the season, the Gamecocks are under 500. Their record dips. They tail off. And I think we're heading towards a bigger disappointment for South Carolina this year than Clemson, even if Clemson is struggling on the bubble just to get into the tournament. Right, we don't know if they're going to make the tournament. But last night was the latest example. And when you increase those expectations by playing like a top 5 or top 10 team in the country, and then turn yourself into this by the end of the year, right, that hurts a little bit more than Clemson getting off to a slow start and now trying to battle their way back into the tournament. Let's hear from the head coaches last night. Let's start with the winning head coach, Monty Lee of Clemson, speaking with the media last night after his team got a big win. Here is what Coach Monty Lee had to say for Clemson.
Well, great win for us tonight. Really did a good job in all areas, threw the ball very well, played good defensively and swung the bats really well. Had a lot of had some quality at bats with two strikes, came up with some big hits when we needed them. And overall, it was great to get a win tonight against a really good South Carolina club. Yeah, I mean, it's a great win for us against a great club, and certainly helps in a lot of different ways. I think we all know, we're fighting like crazy to get into the postseason, and a win like this tonight certainly helps our case. We know we still got work to do. We got to go down to Tallahassee and play a really good Florida State club now, on the road, which is always a challenge. And then we got Duke coming at home. But, every game right now, quite honestly, it's like a playoff game for us. We're fighting every game to put ourselves in a position to get into the postseason. But we certainly took a step in the right direction tonight, but we still got work to do. But it's great to get a win tonight at home against our rival school and play good baseball. We played really good. We threw the ball really well, and I'm just proud of our guys.
That was Monty Lee last night after the win. Clemson did play good baseball. They played winning baseball. Now, according to D1Baseball.com, and this was going into yesterday, I believe. It doesn't include the games from last night, but they had Clemson projected as a 3 seed in Starkville, with Mississippi State, the number 4 team in their rankings, Jackson State, and Southern Miss. Meanwhile, for the Gamecocks, they have South Carolina, again, I believe this was going into last night, as the number 2 seed in Greenville, with East Carolina, their number 13 team in the rankings, Wofford, and NC State. Here's Mark Kingston, head coach of South Carolina, his thoughts after his team lost another game last night.
Disappointed in the result. Clemson played a little bit better than we did tonight, and so, they got the win. And so now we'll put our focus on Kentucky in the weekend and a big SEC series coming up. We kept putting guys on base, and didn't get the big hit. And then that combined with, the big error on the bunt defense, where we had the out of third and we threw it away and they scored 2 runs on that play. That was a turning point for them, obviously, to help their offense. And then our offense not taking advantage of all those base runners early on was obviously the difference in the game.
Mark Kingston last night. South Carolina, they have the 3rd most homers in the SEC, but the 2nd lowest batting average. And you saw last night when they needed a big hit, they couldn't come up with one. And we see this a lot in baseball. You can win a lot of games, but you can't win the biggest games playing like that. You still need good hitters. You need clutch hitters. You need timely hitting. You need 2-strike hitting, 2-out hitting. Maybe you need to play a little small ball. You can't just rely on the home run. Especially when your batting average is the 2nd lowest, you're not putting as many guys on base for those home runs. Not scoring as many runs as you think you would by relying on the homer. South Carolina scoring both runs on homers last night, otherwise couldn't do much. They were hitless with runners in scoring position, struck out over 10 times. And Clemson gets a big win last night against the Gamecocks. Coming up, the NFL schedule is going to be fully released tonight. Reports are trickling out. We're getting games here and there. We already know the entire week 1 of the NFL schedule. But the full schedule will be released tonight. When we come back, what to look for in the NFL schedule when it is released later this evening. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, the NFL schedule is being released tonight. What should you look for if you're a fan of the NFL? It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with former NFL tight end Ben Troop just over 10 minutes from now. Talk about the NFL schedule, the Tim Tebow story, everything else going on in football. This song will get you excited for the NFL schedule release, although Gary Glitter turned out to be a real dirtbag. I think he's in prison, right?
Yeah, he's going to be there for quite a while.
That's like in Seinfeld when Kramerica Industries, and he has Darren, his intern, and they drop the ball of oil out of the office building, and it lands on a woman, and Kramer shows up to the diner the next day, and they say, "What happened to Darren?" And Kramer says, "He's going away for a long time, a long time." And that's the case with Gary Glitter. Like, he's going to be gone for a long time. You're not going to hear about Gary Glitter. All right, the NFL schedule, on a happier note, the NFL schedule is being released tonight. It's trickling out right now, where we're getting all these reports. The local reporters report some of the things they know. I don't know how this information gets out. You either get the whole schedule. You know, I saw tweets like, week six, this game is happening. I don't know how a reporter gets only one game. Like, who's telling them that, hey, by the way, week six, October 17th, we're going to be playing this team? Why don't you give them the whole schedule? Why don't you give them the first couple of weeks? But anyways, we're getting the schedule. It's trickling out throughout the day. The official release will be tonight. You can watch it on TV to get the full NFL schedule if you're into that. But we already have week one. It was interesting this year. The NFL decided for CBS they could release their schedule on one of their networks this morning for only week one. For Fox, they could release their schedule on their radio shows and also on Fox Sports just week one today. And then ESPN put out, you know, their Monday night game, and we already got the Thursday night game for week one. So the NFL wanted week one out there, and then the rest of the schedule will be released tonight. So what we know right now, the Panthers and Jets will play week one. Now, I thought this would be a Thursday night game in September because, of course, you have Sam Darnold going up against his former team, against his replacement in Zach Wilson, who will be a very interesting quarterback to watch this year. So you knew that would be a big game. For the Panthers, that would be one of their biggest games from a national spotlight this year, Panthers-Jets. Sam Darnold against his former team. I thought it would be a Thursday night game. It's going to be week one to start the year. So how about that? Sam Darnold's first game with the Panthers will be against his former team. Talk about an opportunity. Zach Wilson won't be ready yet. Robert Saleh's first game, and Sam Darnold will go out there and show them, hey, here's what you missed out on me. I'll show you how much better I am than the guy you think you should have replaced me with. I think that's a very fun storyline for the Panthers week one against the Jets. I think it's very intriguing and a great opportunity for Sam Darnold. The Falcons, by the way, will open up with the Eagles. That's a good first game. First-time head coach with Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts as a first-time full-time starter. I think that's a good draw in week one. You want to ease into your schedule. You don't want to dive in with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers week one. So for the Falcons to get the Eagles, and I believe it's at home, that's a good draw there. The Jaguars, for Trevor Lawrence, he goes on the road to Houston week one. Will Deshaun Watson be playing in that game? If so, that'll be very fun. Trevor Lawrence, his debut against Deshaun Watson. If not, well, then that's a nice start for Trevor Lawrence, even though it's on the road, to go up against maybe the worst team in the league if Deshaun is not playing. First-time head coach there as well. Now, of course, Urban Meyer is a first-time head coach, but I'll trust Urban over David Culley. So for Trevor Lawrence, especially if Deshaun Watson does not play, that'd be a nice start for him to his NFL career. Same idea. You don't want to jump in against the Washington football team, go against the top defense. Go up against the Texans. Maybe the worst team in the league this year if Deshaun's not playing. That's a good debut for Trevor Lawrence. Additionally, the Jaguars will be playing in London this year, so Trevor Lawrence will go over there. The Falcons will also have a game in London. They'll play the Jets in London. So if you're a Falcons fan, stay tuned for that coming up later on this year. The first game of the year will be the Buccaneers and the Cowboys, of course. I thought maybe they'd go Buccaneers-Bills. I think that'd be the better game. But we know the Cowboys, they're a big brand, America's favorite team. So they get the Thursday night game to start the season against the Buccaneers. And I already heard this morning Chris Canty talking about how the bigger story will be the return of Dak Prescott. No, it's not. But get out of here. Enough with the Cowboys. The bigger story is Tom Brady, what he's doing, and the Buccaneers returning all their starters trying to win back-to-back Super Bowls. And the first Monday night football game will be the Ravens at the Raiders, as the Raiders will officially open their new stadium with fans for the first time on Monday night football. The first Sunday night game will be the Rams hosting the Bears, as the Rams get to play in their new stadium with fans, and you get to see Matt Stafford. That'll be Sunday night week one. Meanwhile, you get stuck with Andy Dalton and the Bears. But again, big brand, big city, big fan base. Get them on national TV before they're irrelevant, so we get Andy Dalton week one. We'll break it all down tomorrow as we get the full schedule. But if you're a fan of the Falcons, the Panthers, or just an NFL fan or a fan of any of the other teams in the league, what should you be looking for, hoping for, wishing for with tonight's schedule? Let me break it down. Five things. Number one, most importantly, when is your bye week? Especially now with a 17-game season. Remember, the Buccaneers were struggling last year. And the narrative around them was, oh, this team, what a disappointment. They're not going to do much. They had their bye in with four games left. So that would be, what, week 13? They had the latest bye. And they came out of that bye and won their final four games of the regular season and played much better football. The bye week is very important. You don't want your bye week five. Sure, maybe you get off to a slow start. You can try to figure some things out. But then by the time you get to the playoffs, you're worn out. You don't want that early bye week. You'd love it mid-season, especially now at 17 games. Right? Put your bye week 9, 10, 11, 12. That'd be nice. Split your season in two halves. But the later, the better, even if it's all the way in week 13. Then you get rested up, you get ready to make a run down the home stretch like the Buccaneers did last year to win a Super Bowl. The bye is very important. Number two, the Panthers and Falcons don't have to worry about this, but West Coast teams coming to the East Coast. Panthers and Falcons are East Coast teams, so they don't have to worry about it. Because when you go out west, that's not as big of an issue. Plus, they don't have any West Coast games coming to play them this year, and I don't think they go out west. Maybe San Francisco. But it's an advantage nonetheless for East Coast teams. Right? You play at 1 o'clock their time, which is 4 o'clock your time, your body clock, 4 o'clock on the East Coast. That's you're used to playing games at 4 o'clock. That's nothing out of the ordinary. But when West Coast teams come east, a 1 p.m. kickoff is like a 10 a.m. kickoff for their bodies. That's a lot tougher. It's like the Pac-12 trying to have their early games this past year. Right? Everyone thought, that's crazy. You're going to have these kids play that early, local time, just to get the national TV audience? It's tough to get up and get ready to go at 10 a.m. It throws you out of your rhythm, your routine. Plus, you wake up earlier. You got to eat breakfast earlier. Everything throws you out of whack. I remember when my brother lived in California and I went out to visit him. The first night I was there, we were up to like 3 a.m. playing video games, which would have been, 6 a.m. my time. But I had all sorts of energy because you're used to, you can stay up late. It's no problem pushing your body clock back. But when you start it early, when you're waking up now at 3 a.m. instead of 6 a.m., it's like, whoa, this is a little different. Number three of things to look for is the Thursday night game, because most teams now get Thursday night games, and you would love to be home for your Thursday night game. I always share the stat throughout the football season that the home team has at least covered the spread. I don't know about winning outright, but the home team has covered the spread two-thirds of the time on Thursday night football. It is a real advantage for the team that does not have to travel on a short week. So if you're a Falcons fan, Panthers fan of any team, if your team gets a Thursday night game, you hope it's a home game. You also want to see what the game the week prior is, because you definitely don't want to be on the road the week before Thursday night football. They rarely give teams back-to-back road games. That's not very fair. But even being on the road on Sunday and then playing at home on Thursday, you're still traveling in a short week. And you'd really love to have an easier opponent the week before. Play the Texans on a Sunday and then have a short week Thursday. You don't want to have to go up against a tough physical team like the Ravens or a tough team to play against like the Buccaneers on a Sunday and then turn around and play another team just a couple of days later. So look for when your Thursday night football game is, who is it surrounded by, how late in the schedule is it? Because it can serve as a second bye week after the Thursday night game. Number four, primetime games. How many Monday night football, Sunday night football games do you have? Because as a fan, this is more for a fan than a player, I love primetime games. They're still special to me. I hate having to wait around all day for them, but it's still a big deal when your team plays in the standalone game. How many primetime games do you get? When are they? Who are you playing in those games? Do you get any of the holidays? Are you playing on Thanksgiving? Are you playing on Christmas Eve? That's always fun as a fan. That's what I look for. And number five, look for the cold weather games as well, especially when you talk about Panthers or the Falcons. The Falcons have to play in Buffalo this year. They also have to play one of the New York teams other than Buffalo. You don't want those games in December. You don't want to go to Buffalo in December, especially if you're the Falcons. You're used to playing indoors in the South. Even San Francisco, they have to go and play. Right? It can get cold in San Francisco. You'd rather have that game earlier than late. They also go to Miami and Jacksonville, the Falcons do. You'd like those games later in the season. You don't want to play in Florida, even though they're a Southern team. You don't want to go down to Miami in September and play in 100-degree weather. You'd rather go in November or December. The Panthers, they have a similar deal because they are in the same division. They play at Buffalo, at one of the New York teams. You want those games earlier. They play at Miami. You want that game later. Meanwhile, you could get a cold city team like Minnesota coming to your place. You hope that's early if you're Carolina and hope it's really hot because the Vikings play terrible in warm weather. The Panthers also have the Jets, the Patriots, the Eagles. Not as big of a deal for them, but they are coming from cold cities. You'd like to get them maybe in September, a couple of those. And you hope it's really hot in Charlotte in September. You play the New England Patriots, and they're used to warm weather up there. It gets hot and muggy in Massachusetts early in the season. But still, you know, you get them come down, it's humid, it's in the 90s, you try to wear them down. It's better to face them in September than it is December. When you play teams is important. The layout of the schedules will affect how we judge how tough a schedule truly is. But just based off of opponents and how those teams did a year ago, based off of last year's records, the Falcons have the third easiest schedule this year. The Panthers have the seventh easiest. And hopefully they get some good draws tonight. You don't want too many games on the road in a row. It'd be nice to end the season with a few more home games at the end of the season. We'll see what the schedule release brings tonight, and we'll break it all down tomorrow on the show. But when we come back, former NFL tight end Ben Troop will join us. We'll talk about the NFL schedule being released. And for Tim Tebow, what will be the biggest challenge for him to try to make it as a tight end? It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some golf coming up as we do every week with Jeremy Schilling. Also name, image, and likeness later with an organization that's trying to lead the charge. But yesterday we spent a lot of time on the Tim Tebow story with Tebow trying to make it in the NFL now as a tight end. And joining us is someone who knows a thing or two about playing that tight end position in the NFL. It's Ben Troop, who played in the NFL. As an NFL tight end for the Tennessee Titans, played at Florida, was a second-round draft pick. He's with us now. Ben, good afternoon. How are you?
Man, thanks for having me on, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, appreciate the time. I got a lot of things I want to touch on with you, but let's start with Tim Tebow because that's become the biggest story this week. You played at Florida, now before Tebow got there, but you played at Florida. You played in the NFL as a tight end. When you heard this news, were you surprised that Urban Meyer wanted to not only bring in Tim Tebow, but now potentially as a tight end?
I would have been had the whole Chris Doyle situation not happen, earlier in the offseason. But Urban Meyer seems to be a guy that seems to think he's going to rewrite history as it pertains to, NFL coaching and how he goes about doing things. I understand that Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be the savior of a Jacksonville Jaguars organization that doesn't have a lot of history, especially of recent. But the thing about Tim Tebow is, while Tim Tebow is a feel-good story, while Tim Tebow is a legend, when you talk about making his name 45 minutes down the road, becoming a star right there in Jacksonville. He's trying to play the tight end position. And I just go back to something that a guy like Deion Sanders says. Not one HBCU athlete got drafted. You don't tell me there aren't other tight ends that could have went in there and helped that position. Now, when you talk about the tight end position in Jacksonville, it could be one of the worst positions in the NFL as far as like a group goes. But Tim Tebow is going to be a healthy distraction for a guy like Urban Meyer. It's going to be a bad distraction for that organization.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you brought up a point I was going to ask you about. You know, you played in the NFL. I'm sure you would have loved another opportunity, when your career came to an end. How do you think this plays in the locker room where you have guys that are grinding to make a roster every year, and then here comes Tim Tebow, who hasn't played in 9 years, and he gets an opportunity with the Jaguars?
It's going to be split. I mean, obviously, guys not going to voice their displeasure because they don't want to get in. They don't want to fall out of the good graces of Urban Meyer, who is, he's a rookie himself. As far as like being a head coach in the National Football League, most of these guys grew up hearing about Tim Tebow and how great of a player he was at Florida. And the last time he played competitive football was 2012. He fizzled out as a quarterback. Now you're coming back at another position. I understand that Tim Tebow is a unique athlete. He's a guy that keeps himself in shape, but that has nothing to do with playing the position he plays. And it's kind of a slap in the face of guys who play the position, because they make it seem as if this is going to be just an easy transition. He's going to go out there. He's going to block. He's going to run some routes. It's way more to it than that, especially when Kyle Pitts from Florida is the highest drafted tight end ever in the NFL history. When Tebow, if Tebow makes it at the tight end position, I'm judging Tebow how I would judge Kyle Pitts.
Talking with Ben Troop, that's why I thought you'd be a perfect person to talk to, because you played the position at the highest level. You know what it takes. What would be the most difficult part for Tebow to try to make the transition to tight end if he's actually going to try to make this work?
The biggest transition is going to be the fact that the tight end position is not the same as when I was in the league compared to now. These guys are looked upon to not just be factors in the passing game, but these guys, they run the passing game through these guys. You talk about mismatches. I mean, Darren Waller's of the world, or Travis Kelce's of the world, or George Kittle's of the world. You know, these guys are some of the best players in the NFL who just happen to play tight end. Tim Tebow, yeah, he can run. Yeah, he can probably get open. But just because you can catch him a couple of passes, and it's a passing league right now, the biggest transition going to be for Tebow is, I'm used to watching the whole field from a quarterback position. Now I got to watch the whole field from a tight end position. And just because I may be a little bigger than the linebacker covering me, a little more athletic than the safety covering me, these guys covering him are going to say, look, dude, I spent my whole life trying to get to this position, playing the position I've always played. I am not going to let you make a mockery of me just because you and the head coach are best friends.
You know, you mentioned that the position has changed since you were in the league, which I was going to ask you about because I found this interesting. I went back to look. In 2003, there was only one tight end in the top 35 receivers in the league. Your rookie year in 2004, there were six tight ends, and then you also had Jeremy Shockey, number 36 in the league. So tight ends, really, your rookie year was when it kind of started, where these tight ends are now more of pass-catching targets. You mentioned Kyle Pitts. I'll ask you about him in just a moment. But I look back at you, and you had, you know, in 2005, you had 55 catches with the Titans. But you're 6'4". You're a big guy. Do you feel like maybe you were a little too early, that if you came into the league nowadays, you could be better suited as one of these pass-catching tight ends?
No, I think I just wasn't the exception. I mean, the whole thing about it is you got to have the exception to the rule for it to become the norm. I mean, I had Tony Gonzalez. I had Antonio Gates. I played in the same division as Dallas Clark. So you had guys that was doing it. But it took a guy like Rob Gronkowski to make the world take notice, because he was on the best team with the best player and who was winning the most games. So when you look at the magnitude of where he was being the Patriot way, you had the year of Gronk. Then, you know, you get guys like Jimmy Graham. Now you start seeing a plethora of guys for whom they're not asking you to be something you're not. Most guys come into the league, they say, you got to learn how to block, you got to learn how to do this. No. Kyle Pitts is going to be asked to do what he did in Florida with the Atlanta Falcons. They're not going to make him do it. He's built like a freaking greyhound. The boy can run 4.4 speed, 6.6, the longest wingspan. I think with me, I had to transition to know the full nuance of the tight end position compared to just doing what I specialize in. You got guys that was doing it when I was there, but I think now they're not forcing these guys to be something they're not, and I'm happy because the tight end position is not looked upon as a glorified offensive lineman. These guys are weapons.
Yeah, which is what we've heard about Kyle Pitts, is that he's really more of a wide receiver. He played at Florida. You played the tight end position at Florida. You've already touched on it a little bit, but what do you like about Kyle Pitts? Why can this kid be really special in the NFL?
I mean, what's not to like about him? I mean, this guy, I mean, all the 6'6". I mean, a guy who, you know, I mean, he's a Philly kid. So the fact that, I mean, I do not believe he grew up wanting to play in the SEC, but you look at what the tight end position at Florida was lacking. And I don't compare nobody to him. I think his game does compare to a guy like Darren Waller when you look at a guy who played receiver at Georgia Tech, transitioned to tight end. You look at, they got similar builds and similar games. But I think the thing about Kyle Pitts is he got the longest wingspan. I mean, all of 4.4, you know, speed. And all his catches came against cornerbacks when he's lined up on the outside. I mean, linebackers too small. As far as, like, I mean, safeties, they ain't fast enough, big enough. What makes Kyle Pitts incredible is he knows he's good, but he puts in the work. Kyle Pitts can do it all. I mean, most guys in the passing game, they have limits to their ability. Kyle Pitts don't have no limits, man. I mean, the best. I mean, they asked him what type of animal would he describe himself. He said, I would call myself a unicorn. And to me, that is what he is. I mean, you've heard about it before. You've never really seen it before. And because he got Matty Ice, I think this dude could be as good as he want to be.
Yeah, you know, I've been on record. I think Kyle Pitts is going to have a really good NFL career, but I was rooting for the Falcons to take a quarterback for the long-term picture of the organization. But when it comes to quarterbacks in this draft, we hear so much about Trevor Lawrence, even a guy like Zach Wilson, Justin Fields. When you were playing in Tennessee, the Titans drafted Vince Young, and Vince Young coming out of college seemed like the next big deal, but obviously did not have that NFL career. So when we talk about young quarterbacks, think back to your time in Tennessee and watching Vince Young and the rest of his career. Where did things maybe go wrong? How come things didn't work out with Vince? How come the quarterback position is still so hard to judge?
A lot of these guys come from such big-time colleges, you know, big-time careers. They haven't dealt with losing. See, the best players in the NFL, they don't get used to losing, but you got to adjust to losing to learn how to become a consistent winner. And you think about a guy, you know, like Vince Young. I mean, probably could have definitely won the Heisman that year. You go back to that 2005, 2006 Rose Bowl, one of the best games ever in the national championship, 200 yards rushing by a quarterback. He was thinking that I'm just going to walk into Tennessee and it's just going to go my way. End up winning the Rookie of the Year. But you got to make the adjustment. Just because you have the ability, you have to be able to apply coaching. And the thing about Vince Young is, Vince Young wasn't used to being told that's not good enough. And that's the hardest thing for any player to be. When I've been the best player in Houston, the best player in Texas, the best player in college, now I'm being told that's not good enough, Vince. You have to understand that everybody goes through that transition. It's like getting injured. If I can handle the injury bug in the NFL, I got a shot to have longevity. Vince Young is going to look back on his career, and he's going to say to himself, I didn't make it in the NFL because I could not take hard coaching. The best players that could take hard coaching, they got a chance to be really, really good.
Talking with Ben Troop, who played tight end in the NFL, was a second-round pick of the Titans, played at Florida. The NFL schedule gets released tonight. We're seeing some reports throughout the day, but the official schedule is released tonight. As a player, did you pay much attention to the schedule? You know, how important is the layout of the schedule for players or teams?
It's huge. It comes down to one thing, Monday Night Football, because that's when everybody's watching. I know they've added, you know, Thursday night now, and everybody want to know who's playing on Thanksgiving, you know, basically who's going to play Detroit and Dallas in a controlled environment on Thanksgiving. But I didn't realize how prestigious Monday Night Football was, because there are guys not only who's never made it to the playoffs in their whole career, 10, 15 years, never played on Monday night, which means Monday night means that you are two teams that the world wants to see. So if you don't play on Monday night, the NFL has deemed you unworthy. So Monday Night Football, maybe Thanksgiving, maybe Saturday Night Football. I want to be able to go up against some of the best players in the NFL. So outside of the AFC South, which we weren't going to win because I played during the time of Peyton Manning, we weren't going to win the AFC South. But to be able to go out there and know when I get to go up against some of the best players out there, man, I'm a fan of a lot of these guys. And sometimes you realize these guys are a fan of you, but I want to be able to share the field with some of the best players out there.
Before we let you go, let me try to get a couple of quick stories out of you, because you played for some great coaches. Let's go back to your college days. You originally played for Steve Spurrier, who around here in South Carolina people adore. What was your time like playing for Spurrier at Florida?
It was great it was great for two reasons. One, I played tight end, and two, I didn't play quarterback. So it was great for me. I didn't have to worry about, you know, if he threw a headset, it wasn't because of me. If he was talking about why the team ain't playing well, it wasn't because of me. And the thing about Steve Spurrier that's not talked about enough is how great of a human being he is. Steve Spurrier coached a lot of players. I was not a high-profile player. I'm in the media now. And every time he sees me, he calls me Benny. And the reason why he calls me Benny and not Ben, he says, because, Ben, if you're a part of my family, your family calls you Benny. I'm not going to call you Ben because that means I'm an outsider. I'm not an outsider. He said, your family entrusted me with you when you came to Florida. And to recognize me now in the media, I was at SEC Media Days a couple of years ago, and he came on Radio Row, what I was. He said, I'm not doing radio. So I said, you come on Radio Row to tell everybody you're not doing it. He saw me, Tim McClain, the SID of Florida, say, hey, Benny, you want to do an interview with Coach Spurrier? I said, he's not going to do it. He said, he'll do it for you. He sat down with me for 6 minutes in front of all these seasoned radio vets. So I just appreciate him, and I think he found a way to have an individual relationship with every single player he's ever coached.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And in the NFL, you spent the majority of your career with Jeff Fisher, but you did spend some time in Tampa. So I do want to ask you about John Gruden. What was it like spending some time playing for Gruden?
Man, what you see with them sound bites is how he really is. Listen, I love football. He's in love with it. This guy loves the game of football. He would film himself in the office and meeting room to watch himself later in his office by himself. If that ain't crazy, I don't know what it is. But the man is an offensive genius. But he puts it in perspective for you. He'll go, Ben, you're like a boxer, and I'm your trainer. All I'm telling you to do is keep punching, right? He said, now think about this. You do all the work, but I get the credit. I call the play, you run the play, you execute the play. So if you get the Super Bowl MVP, he said, you get a car, and I get a street named after me. He said, so it's kind of like a healthy balance. If you were to look at it, he helped me realize the business of football That's all it is. It's not personal. It's business, because that same John Gruden cut me after the second game of the season in 2008, and I ain't spoke to him since.
And last one. After you left the Buccaneers, you went to the Raiders, and if memory serves, if I have the timeline correctly, you signed there about 10 days before Lane Kiffin got fired, and that was one of those, you know, Al Davis brought out the projector, and he was doing the whole press conference. What was it like being there with Lane Kiffin for a short amount of time? He gets fired. You know, Al Davis running the organization. What was your time like in Oakland?
I mean, Lane Kiffin didn't have a shot, man, because he was too young, and people thought he only got the position because his dad, Monty Kiffin, over there, you know, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The thing is, the guys just didn't respect. I wish they would have respected him more, but they didn't respect him. I didn't know he would become what he's become now. But Lane Kiffin was just ahead of his time, man. Just like when he was in Tennessee. Right situation, just wrong guy to helm, because I just think that the Oakland Raiders, they listen, as brutal as the fan base is, you was already on the loser franchise led by Jamarcus Russell. Listen, man, them guys want to do anything but win out there. I ain't never been to a losing culture in my life. So when people say culture matters, look at the teams that win and look at the teams that lose. I guarantee you the ones that win got a better culture than the ones that lose.
Great stuff. He's Ben Troop, played in the NFL for the Titans, second-round draft pick, played at Florida, now works in radio. You can follow him on Twitter at BenTroop84. Ben, awesome stuff. Appreciate the stories, the insight. We'll have to catch up again closer to the SEC football season.
Appreciate it.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Ben Troop. NFL tight end back in the day with the Titans, the Buccaneers, the Raiders, played at Florida before Tebow and Urban Meyer. And appreciate the insight. I thought he'd be perfect. When we were talking Tim Tebow yesterday, I said, let me reach out to Ben, see if we could get him on the show. Because I figure talking to an NFL tight end would be perfect. Because I think that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but especially tight ends. When you're thinking, wait a minute, you think this position is so simple where we have guys grinding and you're going to bring in Tim Tebow to try to play the tight end? We got other tight ends working hard to try to keep their spot in the NFL. And here comes Tim Tebow, 9 years out of the league, to become a tight end, which he's never played before, or at least hasn't played since JV high school football. When we come back, Urban Meyer, did he walk back the Tebow idea just a little bit? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, did Urban Meyer walk back the Tim Tebow story just slightly? Appreciate the time last segment from Ben Troop, NFL tight end who played up Florida before Urban and Tebow. And if you ever missed anything from the show, such as that conversation, you can find it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. We'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling coming up at the top of next hour. But before we go here at the top of this hour, let's first sneak in a call, 843-721-9500, to join the conversation. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, pretty good, man, on this rainy day.
Yeah.
Real quick, I'm not really sure I like this NBA basketball the way it is. You know, the way that pick and roll and you shoot the three, pretty predictable, you know? And, you know, in the playoffs, you got that one lockdown defender on each team. You know, Curry's not going to be scoring 60 points in a playoff game. Or no one is, by that matter.
Right. The playoff basketball is a lot different than regular season basketball. But that's why someone like James Harden has struggled in the playoffs, because you don't get as many whistles, for example, in the playoffs as you do in the regular season. But I'll say this. We know football is king in this country, and I think in large part because the trend or the directions of the sports. We're all about analytics these days. Analytics have made basketball and baseball tougher to watch. Baseball's all strikeouts and home runs. I don't think it's good for the product. Basketball's all three-pointers and layups. I don't think it's good for the product. But analytics tell you in football, go for it more frequently and throw the football more frequently. And I think that is good for the viewer at home and the football product. Football is king, and part, maybe a small part, but part of the reason is because the direction with analytics actually favors football. But I think it hurts basketball and baseball. And I agree with Ricardo. I don't like the direction of the NBA or the basketball world with how the game is played these days. Stay safe on those roads out there with this weather today. We'll talk golf with Jeremy Schilling next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.